Boss the vibes on KWVA Eugene 88.1 to keep it real.
When I step up in the place, they don't watch them correct.
The views expressed on this program are not necessarily the views of KWVA Radio or the Associated Students of the University of Oregon. Anarchy Radio is an editorial collage providing analysis and opinions of John Zerzan and the community at large. Oh, could it be time for Anarchy Radio, April 28th. Just Carl and me tonight, and possibly your phone calls, 346-0645 or 541-346-0645 if you are not in Eugene, Oregon. Okay, well, in less than a month, I'll be getting to Finland and Spain, and I'm going to say it for the second time. I'm just so gratified and thrilled that they're having a one-day conference at the university in Tampere, Finland, centering on my work. I'm just amazed at that. I'll be there a couple of days and then almost a week in Barcelona. And I just found out this afternoon, and by the way, it's going to be Kari and Danielle that'll take over that one show. I'll be gone almost 2 weeks, but only miss one show. And they're busy on that already. And then in the middle of June, I probably will miss two shows, just to kind of a heads up. See, going to have to line that up a little later on. Moscow and Italy. A book fair in Moscow on the second weekend. And then a festival in Pitigliano, a little town north of Rome in southern Tuscany, not too far north of Rome. It's all about recycled bikes.
Oh, sweet.
And a whole three-day thing and other aspects. I don't have all the details, but bicicletta is the Italian for bicycle, but I don't know what the word for recycled is. And there's other events, and it's a beautiful hill town. It's just
sounds rough.
It's very rough. I was there once before, as a matter of fact. Stampa Alternativa is a publishing house that's sponsoring this. I mean, you go around a turn. You're out in the countryside. You go around a turn, and then you can see Pitigliano. And it just, a cliff rises straight up, and there's a town on the top. It's really breathtaking, this medieval town.
Wow.
It's just incredible. It's a little scary driving up there, but once you get there, it's pretty neat. The big, big news, as I bet everybody knows, is the swine flu thing, which is already now meriting the term pandemic. Now. Well, you know, this is what you get. You get increasing intensive domestication, industrialized domestication, and you got increasingly extensive globalization. I have just, I mean, by the hour, it's just spreading to every country, from New Zealand to you name it. I mean, every place. And this is not new. I mean, of course, the most famous one was immediately during World War One, and for about a year after World War One. Of course, a world war is a pretty big globalizing event, if you will, to begin with. But one thing I noticed in the coverage, trying to keep on top of this, this is a respiratory ailment caused by a virus. Mexico City seems to be where the only deaths so far. I think there might have been some other fatalities in Mexico, but mostly Mexico City. Speaking of respiring or breathing, you have a hard time breathing in Mexico City, as with any giant city. You know, I've been in some of them, like Istanbul, Sao Paulo. I mean, it just gets incredible, and they haven't even mentioned the toxic air, which would probably have something to do with multiplying the effects to a fatal level. I think that's clearly what happened. And I heard, I can't remember where this came from, but the official source of this, it's kind of almost like an official definition, was this is what you get when large numbers of people and other species live in close proximity. Mm-hmm. You're going to get these big infectious things like the plague and so forth.
Bugs that jump back and forth.
Exactly. And it's also the definition, or a serviceable definition, of civilization, which is why you didn't have these infectious diseases before that, because people lived in a very decentralized way, band society. First of all, they didn't have domesticated animals, much less massive numbers of them. So it's hard to miss the thing there. There was something in, I read some sort of science news thing on Friday. It occurs to me that this is sort of related. It's certainly in terms of the domestication thing. From the world of animal genetics, they have allegedly decoded the genome of the cow. The findings provide, quote, tantalizing clues to explain, quote, the essence of bovinity. The essence of bovinity. It just sounds Frankensteinian. Wow. Yeah, domestication uber alles. Now we have the essence of bovinity. It isn't just a cow. It isn't just, you know, obviously it isn't the free animal or creature. It's they're getting down to the genes and the genomes and the...
Well, you know, the essence of bovinity packs better onto a truck.
Ha ha ha. Ooh, yes, and we know where they're headed. Oh, yeah, I love that. The essence of bovinity. That's just, it'd be poetic if it weren't so awful. And this is a kind of this is nothing new. Of course, the swine flu thing is new. But coincidentally, in the UK publication, The Ecologist, and now see if we had TV, I could hold this up. I'm going to wait for that. It's too bad. Sick as a pig. It's the biggest article in the April issue of The Ecologist. It's all about factory farms of Northern Europe and the swine, mm-hmm. the pigs that live there. You can call it living. And in Netherlands in particular, the Netherlands has a higher concentration of farm animals per square kilometer than any country on the planet. And this story is really about, as the title sort of implies, the MRSA phenomenon. Mm. You know, they're these resistant, antibiotic-resistant diseases, bacterial infections. They are no... It's a close link between this industrial... the horrors of these the pigs, you know, forced together in domestication, and because they pump the antibiotics in, and as with humans, it's only even more to the point, or even more graphically, you know, the evidence is even clearer with all these strains of MRSA are emerging from the worst excesses of domestication. Yeah, some pictures are not too soothing there. And the other, there are some other epidemics. This conficker worm.
Oh, yeah.
It's finally getting off the ground, I guess, right?
I thought that was supposed to be like the April 1st. The April 1st thing. Wasn't that conficker?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like they're finally, it says, this is a piece of Friday news, conficker worm finally begins attacking PCs.
The software thing
that takes over your PC.
Yeah.
And turns the computers into slaves that obey commands from somewhere else.
Zombie computers.
Yeah, wow. So it's not just swine flu.
It's funny that it menace. Turns your computer into a slave.
Yeah.
Or it could be turning you into a slave. The computers are doing that anyway.
Right. Yes, connecting the dots. We got some action news. A slight sampling. Thank you very much. Let's see. You know, there was this conference board datum that came out this morning. It was released this morning about how, I know Catherine won't be happy to hear this, but the consumer confidence, probably the most basic indicator. It means, are you going to buy something or not? Sooner, you know, pretty soon. I think that's what it means. It jumped way up when the figures came out. I guess it's for the past month for which they have data. So maybe we are toward the bottom of this recession. Who knows? Maybe that'll be swamped by worse and more important news. But anyway, in Europe, especially in France, lots of angry workers smashing up stuff. The Clairoy factory, for example, in northern France, lots of windows and furniture and desks and everything. Smashed, and this kind of thing is rare. There's militancy in France. If you know any history of France, it's for sure, but not this kind of angry vandalism. They have locked up their bosses in different car plants. I've mentioned that once or twice. Last Tuesday, workers from a factory, a German-owned auto parts factory, exploded in anger. Just north of Paris. Anyway, there've been a lot of spirited stuff by some industrial workers in northern France. The violence in Iraq keeps coming on, and there's some people aren't liking the occupation, and that's certainly a mixed bag of who they are. The getting back to protests, I think this could be very clearly linked to the recession. There was a piece in Thursday's New York Times about a plant in Bargashi, Russia, which builds something which the workers there call the anti-democracy truck. And it's kind of a tank. It's called the Storm. It's a model of crowd control vehicles built by this Russian factory. It's a big water cannon. It looks like a kind of caterpillar, I mean a bulldozer thing in front. And anyway, this corporation is kind of hoping for more action, you know. Social unrest fueled by economic distress could be a global phenomenon. A struggling factory prepares for hard times by hoping that, you know, they'll need this equipment. It shows a picture of people rioting in Moldova, smashing a fire truck. Because it wasn't protected, it wasn't armored or anything.
Yeah, I'd love to see that company's brochures.
Right. Come to lovely Bargashi and check out our weapons.
You get to try it out for free before you buy. Try before you buy.
Uh-huh. Drive it into a mob of people that you don't like or something. Thessaloniki, middle of last week. There's an information engineering college there in the center of Thessaloniki, Greece's number two city in size. Damaged a lot of computers and smashed up the place, smashed up the windows in the middle of the day. And yeah, they're trying to get more systematically repressive in Greece, but at the same time, there are folks that are apparently more willing to take off in the middle of the day, not just at night. And they talk about the scarcity of freedom, the surveillance state, and that this particular educational institution, which is a British one, is a think tank for sovereignty, for control and domination. It says, well, with our attack, we send our greetings to the sleuths of Scotland Yard. And that is referring to the fact that the UK has been helping out the Greek state, trying to contend with anarchists and others who really heated it up in December, as you will recall, at the murder of this 15-year-old kid. We notify them that they are now on our list. The many recent attacks, either in the darkness of night or in the day, prove that the military supremacy of the state, orchestrated with consent of society and with the propaganda of fear, remains vulnerable because we are watching out and are searching for passages to attack the order and the ethic of this world. We are convinced that with violence we will engrave them in the new map of city guerrilla warfare like the deepest scar in the face of captivity. So they sound pretty committed. And there was, on the weekend, at the IMF World Bank meetings in D.C., not a huge turnout, but there was vandalism. There were bank branches, windows broken out, and spray painting of expensive cars near Logan Circle. So, not big numbers, but some dedicated folks. And in Milwaukee, a car dealership was attacked some night last week. I don't know what night it was, but 26 new cars were severely damaged. The surveillance cameras showed several individuals with big rocks and about $100,000 of damage. They really went to town on these new cars. It doesn't even say what make they are, but and it doesn't even say this is, quote, political, but you get the idea, I mean, on some level. Oh, let's see, the middle of last week, there were some recruiting stations shut down in coordinated Minneapolis-St. Paul actions, lockdown in particular, and McDonald's, five windows were smashed at the McDonald's in Santa Cruz on Ocean Street about a week ago. By the way, the Santa Cruz Anarchist Convergence will be happening from May 7th to the 11th, and they just announced that they have more than 40 proposals for workshops, panels, etc. On the 23rd of April, we snuck into a Norwegian whaling ship making repairs in the Lofoten Islands in preparation for the 2009 whaling season. And to make a fairly short story even shorter, even more brief, they opened a valve and flooded the engine room, and the ship sank before anyone could close it. Anti-whaling activities. I don't see all that much about Norway, but there you go. And nature strikes back, or as my friend Carol said, Mother Nature is eco-terrorists, referring to the wildfires last week in South Carolina. They struck Barefoot Landing, development, a sprawling complex of houses, condos, and golf courses, and Grand Dunes, the most magnificent master planned community ever to grace the Atlantic coastline. So, they were burned in the wildfire thing. Let's see. Announcements-wise... Well, May 1st to the 3rd, that's coming up starting Friday evening with the keynoter Andrea Smith of Chicago. I think she was the founder of Insight, the zine and the project. And the Against Patriarchy thing will run on Saturday and Sunday as well, May 1st to the 3rd. On May 3rd, that Sunday, the 3rd, the grand opening of Toledo's Anarchist Community Center. It sounds like a big one. All kinds of projects are going to be housed there. Very ambitious thing that they've been working on for a couple of years. And this is a ways off. It's almost a month off, but May 22nd at Cosmic Pizza, right here in Eugene, there's going to be a benefit for Marie Mason, the political prisoner who got about 20 years last month, snitched on by her husband, her ex-husband. And that sounds like an amazing person, but she is doing hard time now. Whole bunch of bands, also poetry by Chilean poet Jesus Sepulveda, who's a friend of this show, and Lauren Regan from CLDC will be talking about Marie's case and the status of the movement of police state type things. Yeah, I'll have more details later. Quite a bunch of music acts at kind of the usual place on Friday the 22nd. There was a get together on Friday, a conference at Pitzer College in LA, kind of out east of downtown LA. The resistance is not quiet, and they got about 100 people. This is a thing for activists. Speakers were Keith McHenry, the founder of Food Not Bombs, and on screen via Skype, and Derek Jensen, who kind of went after the pacifist folks. But, it says, but due to the technology involved in the connection, Jensen had difficulty hearing the discourse in the hall. I don't know about being paid to appear on screen. I guess I probably draw the line against that. But anyway, it's kind of, I think the most interesting part of things like that is where the discussion gets away from the speaker. You know, it's taking place among those who show up, and he wasn't able to hear that. So, but I don't know where to draw the line. I'm going to be on Think Out Loud tomorrow morning in here in Oregon. It's 9 a.m. West Pacific Daylight Time. It's if you want to check it out, opb.org/thinkoutloud. That's the name of the talk show tomorrow morning. It's about energy and conservation, and I have no idea how they got me in there, how they wanted me. They gave me this big screening interview, and toward the end, she asked, what else do you do? And I said, well, I'm a co-editor of Green Anarchy magazine. And she said, are you an anarchist? And I thought, oh, after a half an hour, that's not going to happen. That's just not going to happen. Anyway, they called me today and said, can you be on campus at a studio here on campus? So we'll see. I'm one of the guests, not paid, not on screen. But we'll see what happens.
It's a studio here on campus, but it's not our studio.
Well, they have that one time I was on Fox News. They right next to the Knight, they have that media center. Mm-hmm. I guess they pay something and then they wire you up there. And it's I think I'm the only one that's going to be there because this show comes out of Portland.
You're gonna be all alone in this room,
right?
They're shooting questions at you.
Yeah,
one spotlight.
It's weird. Yeah, I've done that before. On TV, actually, and there was one technician standing there wondering, what the hell is this? What's going on? What are they talking about? Who's this guy? Anyway. Well, here's some news, in quotes. Howard Zinn is going to be the big May Day speaker for Democracy Unlimited down in Arcata. This just struck me as maybe worth a sly comment on. Democracy Unlimited educates citizens about the illegitimate seizure of our authority to govern ourselves. In other words, it's one of these insipid, they spend their time typically on having towns pass anti-war statements which there's probably 10,000 of those. It means zero, but they want to govern themselves. We want democracy, they bleat. Well, Howard Zinn, he's a big fave of AK Press, the supposedly anarchist big press, AK Press. Howard Zinn is a great anarchist. He's about as much of an anarchist as Democracy Unlimited or Noam Chomsky. And meanwhile, the E.F. Schumacher Society, Now, Schumacher was kind of a hit in the 70s for a while. Small is Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Well, he's gone downhill from that. It's very... I'm on their mailing list, and I glance at this stuff. It's very weak, in my opinion. They want industry to be closer to the cities or something. I mean, as if that's some kind of relocalization. It's so mild. It's not even worth... Anyway, they are giving the 29th annual E.F. Schumacher Lectures, and the big star is Bill McKibben, who wrote The End of Nature. Sounds like a strong book, strong only in terms of the title. It's a weak book. And this is what I thought this is interesting about this. Identifies Bill McKibben as, in terms of, in 2007, he led the organization of the largest demonstrations against global warming in American history. Oh, missed that. Boy, it sure didn't do anything about global warming, obviously. The biggest one.
Oh, it's kind of cold today.
This is probably one of these online demonstrations. In fact, I think it was.
Oh, where you go to the website and you're like, I support this.
Yeah, you push the button and it's the biggest demonstration in American history. It's even more... Anyway. And now there's a new zine, and I thought this was a little revealing at long last. It's called Utopia/Emergency. Kind of a catchy title, maybe. I don't know. It's one of the many insurrectionist zines. You know, and I've been in Europe, and I've always wondered, what is that? And what does that mean? What do you want? You know, I've thrown out many times on this show, and it says, we are not leftists. That's one of the things. This is the promo thing. But the point is, it is a compilation of analysis, essays, and communiques linking insurrectionary anarchist/communist theory. Okay. Hmm. I thought you were commies. You were afraid to say it, but now you're kind of saying it. All right. Okay. So maybe we'll get a little more out of them. They were always very vague, always kind of hiding it there. But and not that this is the catechism or the official dogma. But anyway... That's pretty close to it, I'd say, generally speaking. And here's another odd one. Little bag of oddments here. Greenpeace is against nukes. They call for safe energy for the Philippines. Renewable energy and energy efficiency technologies are the genuine solutions to climate change and energy security. Of course, Obama or even Bush could say that. So this is, it's funny, it's people sometimes risk their lives in these bold moves, you know, ramming whaling ships and whatnot, and sinking other boats and so on. And yet this is the tamest thing. So we got the renewable energy. As you said, Carl, I'm paraphrasing you. Yeah, it's better to kill the biosphere with safe and renewable energy than with the other kind. I like it. Well, not to... I don't want to close out on a wholly negative note here. So there's a one-page thing in the same issue of The Ecologist I just referred to, the April issue, called After Frankenstein. It's not even a page, by Tom Hodgkinson. It's quite brilliant, I thought, in the main. He's talking about Leviathan, Thomas Hobbes' famous book that he wrote in the middle of the 1600s, about how if we have more work and more industry, it'll all work out to the good, kind of like Adam Smith, although earlier than that. And, yeah, it's all about hard work and competition. You can't have people just hanging out, because that's where that quote comes from, that otherwise you'd have solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short existence. That wouldn't be much of a society. That'd be awful. Well, Hodgkinson points out that actually... Native folks lived lightly on the earth, and they moved around, they camped, they wore beautiful clothes, they had no concept of property, a little better than the nasty version of the kind of utopia that, if you could call it that, that Hobbes was projecting. And then Hodgkinson brings us up into the present. He referred to the hedge fund philosopher Peter Thiel, one of the three board members of Facebook, and account co-founder of PayPal, etc. To him, nature is a hostile force, which humans use their ingenuity to overcome. This is a classic Thomas Hobbes. It's the same nasty stuff. Thiel characterizes the state of nature as a time when we would eat raw flesh with our bare hands. Well, never mind if people were cooking with fire 2 million years ago. I mean, what are you talking about? Anyway, the state of nature. And in such a brief, succinct piece, Hodgkinson also refers to Brave New World by Huxley, written in the 30s, that this has a lot to do with. It's right in the lineage of Hobbes' Leviathan model. Now, he says, in terms of Huxley's book, it's coming true. We have Prozac, ecstasy, Viagra. We've totally separated ourselves from nature, and we've become stupid. We didn't get brighter, contrary to Hobbes' idea. We feel more lonely and afraid than ever. We are nasty to one another, certainly brutish, and while we may have extended life expectancy, the lives we lead are slavish and passionless. This is an excellent thing, I thought, just for a very brief tying a few things together. Okay, well, I guess we should take a break.
Yeah, I've got this CD ready. What do we? You didn't mention the Shostakovich that we started off with.
Yeah, that could have been
then.
A puzzler.
Cast your mind back.
The opening strains?
Yes.
You couldn't have guessed. Well, now Carl has told you that
it's
Shostakovich.
Shostakovich, the jazz album.
Isn't that amazing? He died in 1976, and who knew that he had a jazz album? Some of it we might, maybe a stretch to call some of it jazz, but it's kind of cool, I thought.
We got some Johnny Cash now? All
there
right.
We go. You're already set.
Hey Porter, would you tell me the time? How much longer will it be till we cross that Mason-Dixon line? When we hit Dixie, would you tell that engineer to slow it down? Or better still, just stop the train, cause I'd like to look around. Hey Porter, what time did you say? How much longer would it be till I can see the light of day? When we hit Dixie, would you tell that engineer to ring his bell? And ask everybody that ain't asleep to stand right up and yell. This old train is puffing smoke and I have to strain my eyes. But ask that engineer if he'll blow his whistle, please. I smell frost on cotton leaves and I feel that southern breeze. Hey Porter, please get my bags for me. I need nobody to tell me now that we're in Tennessee. Don't tell that engineer to make that lonesome whistle scream. We're getting close to home, so take it easy on the steam. Open up the door. When I stop this train, I'm gonna get off first, cause I can't wait no more. Tell that engineer, said thanks a lot, and I didn't mind the fare. Gonna set my feet on southern soil and breathe that southern air.
The views expressed on this program are not necessarily the views of KWVA Radio or the Associated Students of the University of Oregon. Anarchy Radio is an editorial collage providing analysis and opinions of John Zerzan and the community at large. Well, you might not have guessed Shostakovich for the opening sounds, but you probably guessed who that was. Well, we've got a couple of ads of the week here. Been kind of slacking on that. This is kind of a funny one. This has appeared in more than one publication, but for one, and a full-page ad in the New York Times lately called An Open Letter on Progress by Frank Druffel, who is in charge of the Post-Shredded Wheat Company.
This is crazy. Or was?
I mean, I'm guessing that's... Yeah. He's speaking for the shredded wheat, and he says his motto is, we put the no in innovation. And he makes some good points. I mean, it starts out, has progress taken us to a better place? I'd say it's taken for a ride, probably in a carbon-coughing oil guzzler. Honestly, what thanks do we owe progress? We're up to our necks in landfill, down to the wire on resources, and climate change is out to get us, etc. Historically, civilizations are destroyed by achievement. There you go.
Wow.
State of nature. Yeah, he talks about the Romans and the Egyptians and how they did all these things and ruined everything. And when it comes to food, progress is, now we're getting to the point here, has pushed molecules ahead of meals, hormones over homegrown, and our cattle become clones. So that's why progress plays no role at the Post-Shredded Wheat Company. Oh, yeah, and he says, Henry Perkey created the original shredded wheat. One ingredient, wheat, and one machine, the machine. Anyway, people didn't think it was, he thought it was foolish. People thought it was foolish to pour milk over food, but, and you got all this crap, but you just got to stick with post-original shredded wheat. So anyway, I just thought that was odd. And the other one, I'm not going to read this for a while. I guess I'll probably save it because one thing I'm going to do in Finland is read this piece I just finished called Complexity. An ad, a small ad, not a full-page ad, in the current issue of Wired.
Hmm.
And, it jumped out at me because of what I was working on. From Philips. Let me just tell you that. Philips. I think it's probably the biggest corporation in Europe. They make everything. They make music equipment.
Electronics.
And, yeah, electronics. Yeah, lots of stuff. Philips, sense and simplicity is their motto, because complexity never made anyone feel better. That's for sure. And then they go on to make that preposterous in terms of putting it in terms of their what they do and who they are. At Philips, we are dedicated to bringing simplicity to people's care with innovative healthcare solutions. Wow. This is totally high-tech stuff. But somehow while they realize complexity never made anyone feel better, they magnify complexity and its impact on people. Kind of odd. And last week I referred to a piece by someone named Tara Parker Pope, What Are Friends For? A Longer Life, and the many benefits, not just longevity, but health and happiness and so forth. If you have, the more friends you have, and conversely, the fewer friends you have, the shorter you're going to live, and the longer it'll take you to heal, and so forth. Well, there were some letters to the editor about that, including one from Gail Applebaum, who lives in Riverdale, New York, and wanted to add the comfort of touch. Touching each other, walking down a street, hand in hand, or something like that, and how enjoyable it is and healthy it is. And I just sure that's what Philips thinks, too. It's not about multimillion-dollar high-tech equipment that swallows you up. Anyway, let's see. Well, just a little more on the Twitter thing. That could go on forever, and maybe it will, but there's... something I think Catherine and I referred to, but not very specifically last week, an article called Let Them Eat Tweets, Why Twitter is a Trap. As we all know, the microblogging service, so that you post and read fragmentary communications at high speed. Well, the main point of this piece is the illusion of lots of company or lots of friends, and the delusion that anyone cares what you're thinking of having for lunch or how many beers you had last night or whatever it might be. And there's something new I guess you could probably, we could have guessed this one probably. Yeah, the obvious Twitter problem, no one cares. Well, here's the new way to practice alienation and pretend that you're being intimate and communicating something with someone. Oh, Meagle. This, I think, was just in the business pages only this morning, I think, or maybe yesterday. From its earliest days, the Internet has promised to bring together people based on common interests, etc. Well, you don't have to have that. Omegle is, it offers completely anonymous chats with random strangers. So
ew.
It, isn't that, yeah, they're not even, quote, friends, much less friends, they're just strangers. It just, yeah, for a private real-time chat, isn't that nutty? I mean, what? I mean, you could go to the phone book and dial somebody's number, I guess. Or, you know, what on earth? But I don't get it. Who'd want to do that? Are people that desperate and unhooked and deranged that that's going to sell? That's kind of pathological, I think. Well, but no matter how crazy these things get, no matter how much they proclaim the nature of techno society. There are people who are going to say, well, technology is neutral, it's just a tool. As Jeff Lynch said in a letter to the editor here, which ends up, Twitter, as much of social media, is what you and your inner circle choose to make it. Oh, yeah, it isn't part of the whole onslaught, the entire context, the whole redefining things by the entirety of the techno culture. No, it's not that. It's just what you make. It's just a discrete tool, totally neutral. It's got nothing to do with society or values or mores or the dominant insanity. No. Well, and this is an AP story out of San Francisco a couple of days ago about spam. There's a lot of reasons to hate spam and spammers. Well, they're not so good for the environment. How about that? A single spam message results in 0.3 grams of carbon dioxide being released into the atmosphere, the equivalent of driving 3 feet in a car. Isn't that crazy? 3 feet, every single spam message. And you got to have that spam. And I guess you might also got to have the latest thing here. These are glasses. It's the digital dimension from SBG Labs, which is an optical technology company in Silicon Valley. There are messages that project onto your specs. You can see through it, but it's like, I guess it would be kind of like the, when you give a speech, what are those called? Those panels?
Teleprompters.
Teleprompters, yeah. Yeah, I think so. Because it ends up saying, one possible application has the eyewear serving as the wearer's personal whisperer at conferences and parties. What if every time I passed by a person, I had their name come up on the display?
Hi, John. Good afternoon.
Wow. Yeah, you could be like a phony politician. You
wow. Well, you know everybody's name.
How are the kids? They're Jamie and Billy or something. Oh, wow. We could even add information on the last time I saw them and what we chatted about. Oh, wow. Ooh. Creepy, stupid stuff.
I hate people like that.
Yeah, what are they doing? What? And why would anyone want it? Well, I'll probably have a chance to say something on Think Out Loud before they pull the plug on me and wonder how this lunatic got into the studio. Yeah, I mentioned last week, you know I hate to not talk about shootings. Ma, lots and lots of shootings. This was about 9 days ago. The railroad company accountant killed his wife and their three children before he killed himself in a Northwest Maryland home. Today, head of a Moscow District Police Department went on a shooting rampage at a supermarket. It was yesterday, it was announced today. Killing three people and wounding at least six others. First he killed a driver, had given him a ride, then he entered the supermarket and killed a cashier and another man. Uh-huh, he was off duty. I don't know. And late Saturday night, there's still... Oh, no, there's the professor at the University of Georgia who killed three people late last week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they haven't found him yet.
Saturday or something.
And, you know, it's an odd thing. One of the things that strikes you about all this stuff, they're almost all suicides. You know, that's... Mm-hmm. What is that? That's part of the thing that never gets discussed. I mean, that is a statement. Anyway, there was a former Hampton University student late Saturday night who, killed a pizza delivery guy. How many were dead? Several people were shot, and he killed himself at Hampton, Virginia. Well, hospital worker shot and killed two employees and killed himself at a medical center, Long Beach. Last Wednesday, murder-suicide in Towson, Maryland. Bodies of a New York lawyer, his wife, and their two daughters found in a hotel room. Oh, well, how about that? There's almost nothing written about this, really, but this is a very stupid new book that's been getting a lot of ink called Columbine, because it was the 20th, was the 10th anniversary of the Columbine shootings in Columbine High School. They were unfathomably angry. Eric Harris was a psychopath, simple as that. So we've always had psychopaths, but they didn't always kill everybody, or what? I mean, how is this grounded in anything historically or socially? This is a really dumb book. It doesn't really say anything. It's just kind of a titillating book, kind of minute by minute thing, just kind of a sensationalist thing with unthought out things he throws in there with no connection to the real world and how it's going south. Well, I'm going to read this from a great fellow who puts out Warbound. I quoted from it four months ago. I can't remember. You can hardly go a day without the headlines of major U.S. news outlets announcing yet another tragic shooting. Occasionally it's a disgruntled employee or former employee or some otherwise disenfranchised person, but more and more common, it's a family. All too often, many of the pathological manifestations anarcho-primitivists have been pointing to as signs of a deepening crisis that are inherent with domestication have been written off with myopic dismissal by the various mouthpieces of the machine. The problems are never cumulative, no matter how blatantly connected they are. For years, we've been saying better dead than domesticated. And the civilizer's response has always been better off dead. And the rising rates of suicide spoke to whose message was more believable. Whoa, true. Now people are beginning to feel the overwhelming panic of this civilization accelerating collapse that rather look outward and beyond the mass society that is their prison. They've chosen to take their lives and the lives of those closest to them. Better to spare the children the pain of their fathers and their fathers' fathers' failures. People are killing their families out of grief over the state of capital. I couldn't think of a better example to complement when Freddie Perlman described our predicament in terms of being trapped inside an armored beast, in so much that we have begun to identify more with the armor than our bodies. And given the public's reactions thus far, there is a hole in the armor that is not so easily patched by the spinsters of civilization. Spinsters, not spinsters.
No.
There's simply no way to write off the type of gripping horror and outrage that the people feels when one turns on their own loved ones with homicidal rage, especially when, as has been the case in almost all the recent deaths, well, he goes on to talk about different factors, and he says, the hour of Perlman's vision, as the army of civilization finally burns itself out, coming round at last with the great corpse in its death throes, it would seem that the situation brewing with so many seeking understanding in efforts to avoid becoming the next cold body on the living room floor would be opportune for those of us who have long been preparing our ghost dance to show our fellow zecs or inmates that we need not despair as prisoners of Leviathan, but that a great and liberating possibility exists in the abandonment of its corpse. The sooner the better for a feral present and a wild future for total liberation. D.L. Lobos. Nicely done. 3460645. Well, we can wrap it up fairly soon. I'm going to be here the next 2 weeks, I guess, alone, and then Catherine will be here on the 19th, just before I go overseas. I always look forward to that. Just a little bit of the news, which I hope will come into view on discussions like the one tomorrow morning on the radio. Again, it's opb.org/thinkoutloud if you want to listen, if you want to phone in. Might be good to have some callers there. The whole beekeeping thing, sudden colony disorder?
Colony collapse,
right. There's an international meeting about that in Brussels. They're facing the end of beekeeping in Europe. They predict it could only last, only survive another 8 to 10 years the way the die-off of millions of bees, thousands of hives. Well, this just goes through this thing about how the decline has spread in all kinds of areas, and what does that have to do with pollination and so forth, as we know. From Asia, there have been a couple of recent serious pieces about the rising sea levels and how much seawater that backs up into deltas in Indonesia, in Vietnam, and so forth. Can't grow stuff in seawater.
No. Very hard.
I don't think you can. let's see. Coral studies in Mexico suggest this is connected to the potential for rapid sea rise, the implications in terms of the whole global overheating scenario, of course, published in the journal Nature last Thursday. A sudden rise of 6.5 to 10 feet was what happened the last big overheating time, and so they're studying what things are in common as this thing lines up. When these things come together, as they're already coming together in terms of the rapid ice loss and the rest of it, the polar caps, most notably, not to mention the glaciers. And dust storms in the news Friday in the Washington Post, talking about a couple of studies. There have always been, I don't know about always, but there have been dust storms for a long time. There have been 11 serious dust storms in the West so far this year. And it's really, this is becoming a massive soil movement. These massive dust storms on a frequency we're not used to, and it's going to have enormous ecosystem impacts. It's maybe surpassing the Dust Bowl days. And again, a lot of factors coming together. And the dust falling on the ice and snow of the Rockies in this instance causes the snow to melt faster, because it's a dark surface, not a white surface. Mega droughts in Africa. There have been past mega droughts, but these are greatly magnified now, more recently. The journal Science talked about this 10 days ago. The world's poorest people in many of these African cases, greatly exacerbating the droughts that happen. Oh, new satellite tracking shows air pollution is a lot worse than we thought. And, gosh, I don't want to forget this one. This is great. That's another one about tons of 271 million pounds of pharmaceuticals into the waterways that often provide drinking water, down the toilets via excretion and otherwise from factories. That too is a bigger thing than was thought. And it's always said, well, it's not enough to bother anyone, but in other words, there are no confirmed human risks, but this is a mounting thing. Researchers have found that human cells fail to grow normally in the lab when they're exposed to even trace concentrations of many of these drugs. Extremely diluted concentrations of these drugs harm fish, frogs, and other aquatic species. And to cap it off, let's go out on this one. Thank you to Carol and to Nick. Bioengineering. Let's hear it. A team of South Korean scientists has created the world's first fluorescent puppy, according to New Scientist magazine. The cloned beagle, dubbed Ruppy, which is short for Ruby Puppy, four-legged experiment that looks like a normal pup in daylight, but under ultraviolet light glows bright red. Created by cloning cells that include a red phosphorescent gene. Transgenic. Meaning she has genes from other animals. It's the first, they've done this before, but not, this is the first for canines. There are four beagles, other beagles, that have the same red glowing thing. One scientist called the glowing puppy an important accomplishment. It's pretty glorious. Well, onward and upward, and spring is unfolding, and there's lots more to talk about, and lots more action to see and jump on. I think some good things are going to be coming down the pike. And so with that, we're going to go out. Thanks, Carl. See you next week.